From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the summer of 1982 in the pages of Playboy magazine. Here's the backdrop. New York City Mayor Ed Koch was the massive favorite in the Democratic primary for governor. He was well known, considered a kind of national figure. New York Lieutenant Governor Mario Cuomo was not at the time, but Cuomo offered a challenge to Koch. Now, throughout the campaign, it became clear that Cuomo was a remarkably skilled politician, a gifted touch with voters, and he knew how to dominate a debate. But it was still an uphill battle. And then Playboy magazine published an interview with Koch, Koch bashing the suburbs. He bashed Albany because there were no good restaurants there. He sounded like a guy who loved New York City and looked down on pretty much everywhere else. How much did that interview affect him with voters? His staff would say it followed him wherever he went. But let's give Mario Cuomo credit as well for his skills that helped him win that primary, then the governorship. And that riveting story is the start of a new documentary covering the career of the late New York governor. It comes from journalist Matt Ryan. It's called Governor Mario Cuomo, Poetry and Prose. You can see it online now, but you're going to get a taste of it today. And you're going to be able to see it on WXXI-TV Sunday, December 18th at 7 p.m. And I would honestly set your calendar for it, because if you love politics or if you're interested in our state's dealings at all, it is remarkable. Sunday, December 18th, 7 p.m. on WXXI-TV. And I want to welcome our guest now. Matt Ryan is the managing editor and co-host of New York Now and the man behind this documentary. Congratulations on it, Matt. Thanks for taking the time for the program.
Thank you, Evan. Great to be back with you.
And Karen DeWitt's on the line with us. She's the Capitol Bureau Chief for WXXI News. You will see her in the documentary as well. And Karen, welcome to the program to you as well.
Thanks, Evan.
Karen, I want to start just a little bit of breaking news before we dive into the documentary, which is our focus for the hour. It's great to have you on the line, Karen, because we've seen the news breaking this morning that Governor Andrew Cuomo, of course, has been close with Elaine Calleiros. And the news this morning that SUNY Polytech President Elaine Calleiros has officially resigned his post. Yes?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a hold of that letter. I should have it pretty soon. If I do before our half hour, my half hour with you is up, I'll tell you about it. But he has resigned his post as head of SUNY Poly. He was already on unpaid leave, but apparently he still wants to retain his job as a professor at SUNY. And it may be more difficult to remove him from that, because the professors have a union, you have tenure, you have all sorts of protections. So he may be able to keep that. And certainly one would presume that he probably needs the money, because he's going to be paying quite a lot of money in legal defense over the charges of bribery and kickback.
Yeah, I mean, I think listeners may be wondering, can you teach from jail? But I guess that his goal is to defend himself as best he can here. This is going to be fascinating to see. And Karen, we're going to be talking about the Cuomo family. Andrew's a big part of this documentary. What do you make of this resignation by Elaine Calleiros and everything around Cuomo? I mean, in the last, you know, so I guess, what has it been, a week or 2 weeks since this really busted open? What has, how guarded has the governor been? How forthcoming has he been about the impact here?
He has his spin that it was, you know, nine individuals, the criminal complaints were against them, and it really didn't have anything to do with him. And he has been forthcoming. He's had a number of public appearances, where he does answer questions from the press. He does have his own take on it, and he's blamed SUNY Poly for a lot of the problems, saying they have a different way of obtaining government contracts. We're not going to do that anymore. It's going to be under my agency, Empire State Development. Also notice he's been careful not to criticize Elaine Calleiros directly. He's been saying, well, Calleiros was good, he did a lot of good, but, you know, now we're distancing ourselves from, you know, how they got these contracts, which makes some of us think that he's being careful because he's worried that Calleiros could become a cooperating witness and turn against him, which so far he hasn't, but maybe they're afraid of that.
Well, we'll continue to follow that, and I know Karen DeWitt will continue to follow that for WXXI News today. So, Karen, my next question is, you're in this documentary. Have you seen it?
Oh, of course.
Isn't it outstanding?
It's a very brief cameo that I'm in. Let's just make it clear. But yeah, I lived a lot of what Matt has in his really excellent documentary. And I really feel like he, you know, because he wasn't there, he's too young to have been to many of these things. But he really captured, you know, the spirit of what it was like then. You know, it really took me back to, like, that was exactly what it felt like in some key moments of Mario Cuomo's career, which I think, you know, Matt is going to discuss in a few minutes. And he really brought that to people, I think, in a really accurate way, speaking as someone who was there for some of those key moments.
Sure. And if I could, Matt, let me just ask from the outset here, why did you want to make this film now? Was it because, you know, you had this understanding that there was an opening, that somehow no one had really told this story in this entirety the way you did?
Yes. Once you watch a documentary and you see all this wonderful footage, it's something that my station out here, my PBS station out in Albany, WMHT, we've had exclusive rights to this footage, you know, since it was originally broadcast back in the 1975 is when it started out. The program Inside Albany ran from 1975 to 2006. And, you know, it wasn't just covering, you know, the top press conferences. They were covering everything, you know, every nook and cranny, legislative hearings. I mean, it was really a pioneering program because it was covering state government at a time when most people, most organizations in our medium, television, really weren't outside of, you know, the breaking stories.
It was kind of like a weekly mini documentary, the way when you look back at Inside Albany and just how thorough they were every week. And for all the people who were at the Capitol, and certainly when I was here as a young reporter, it was the must-watch show on Sunday nights. Everybody involved in state government watched it, either hoping they might see themselves in the background of a shot, or they might be interviewed, or just to find out, you know, a lot of what was going on. I mean, certainly we had the newspapers reporting it, but they would give you a look, you know, profiles of different, you know, important people in state government. It really was, you know, considered an essential show to watch in its day.
Well, Matt, I have to know, I'm a bit of a process junkie, so I have to know how much time you had to spend going through the archive that you had access to, because in this documentary, we see some fabulous clips. He was a devastating debater based on,
yes,
from the clips I've seen. How much time did you spend going through those clips?
You know, at the beginning of the process, I meant to clock exactly how long, and I just lost track. I honestly don't know, other than tell you it was a long time. And one of the important parts here, Evan, is that all of this old footage was mostly on 1-inch reels, you know, which is, you know, from the dinosaurs
yes,
nowadays. But, you know, an important part of this process is all of that old footage has now been digitized and preserved. And that was one of the concerns as I was picking out some of the shows and some of the dates that matched up, ones that I wanted to grab. The concern was, you know, these tapes haven't been used, they haven't been moved in so long that they might snap. And I know Ken Burns talked a lot about this when he was making his epic documentary, The War, back in 2007 on World War II. He was in the National Archives, and he was going through all these tapes and found some great stuff. And then in the transfer process, they snapped, you know, some of them. So that was a concern. All the tapes came back mostly in really good condition, considering. To answer your questions, it was a lot of hours. I have no idea how many, but it was a process that I thoroughly enjoyed.
And you end up with interviews with a wide range of people, but of course a big get was going to be Governor Andrew Cuomo, and there was no guarantee that he would sit down with you. And my understanding,
no,
Matt, is that happened very late in the process, yes?
You can call it 11th hour, 58th minute, essentially, is what it was. I mean, I reached out to the governor's office initially in May. I wanted to have a few strong interviews, you know, kind of under my belt before I approached them, just to let them know that we had something, you know, I think pretty special going on. But my goal all along was honestly to kind of put out some kind of, you know, killer trailer to show we had this great video, to show we had some really consequential interviews. And then, you know, maybe he would say, you know what, maybe this is something I want to be a part of. And an hour or two after it was released on the web, I heard back from the governor's office. And after a couple of cancellations, I talked to him literally, and Karen can back this up, at just about one of the last moments I could have spoken to him. That was right before the news broke out that the scandal involving Joe Prococo and Todd Howe and Dr. Collieros hit, I don't know, September 20th or 21st.
Yeah, it was just one. He got the interview just one day before U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara handed out his criminal complaints, which I think would have certainly nixed that interview because Cuomo would have been afraid that you'd be in his office and say, "Oh, and that's by the way, what about such and such?" You know. So well, yeah, it was really amazing. And I, you know, when you look at the documentary, I think Andrew Cuomo is really integral to it because he provides the voice and the insight into his father that. You know, Matt couldn't do because Mario Cuomo had passed away by the time he started the documentary. So, Andrew really did add a lot to it, I think.
And, you know, as you know probably, Evan, that Andrew Cuomo does not do sit-down one-on-one interviews, you know, especially in television. I mean, it's like seeing Haley's Comet. So it was a really big deal to get him, no doubt.
Yeah, listeners may detect in my voice a little bit of saltiness there. Hey, if you guys have any ins you want to get them on this program, it hasn't happened yet. So, and you know, let's just point out one of the interesting differences because Andrew Cuomo, you can tell the affection for his father, the genuine love for his father, but he's very different in that Matt and Karen, you've both pointed out over the years that Mario was a guy with a reputation for being very accessible to the point, Matt, where I guess I've heard you tell stories where, well, he'd stop the motorcade if he'd see protesters and go engage them directly, yes?
Yes, and Karen can back this up, too. There were times where he would have multiple press conferences in Albany, you know, within hours of each other. There was one reporter I talked to who, you know, just kind of looked back at that time and shook his head because he used to have to bring, you know, double sets of batteries and tapes and, you know, just having a basket full of extra film and all that just so he could get everything that Cuomo was saying, much different from what we deal with now here in 2016 with Andrew Cuomo, whose press conferences during his first 3 years, I mean, he had a lot of them. He made himself really accessible, and it was after the initial shutdown of the Moreland Commission where they became few and far between.
Yeah, now it's pretty much dried up. You don't. We really don't see Andrew Cuomo. He does make appearances around the state, but almost never in Albany anymore, where reporters would be able to follow up with some of his statements. Not that the reporters in the rest of the state aren't getting pretty darn good at this, I have to say, you know, over the years and seeing the governor so much, but he doesn't really have to face the pressure in the same way. I remember one time there were senior citizens and they were protesting at the Capitol and they were walking round and round the halls before, like, now there's access is cut off and there's locked doors, but you could wander around the halls and have a protest. And Mario Cuomo got out of his office and he stood on the trooper's desk, because they had a trooper outside of his office, to address the crowd. And I was in that crowd, and all these senior citizens started, like, surging toward him. And I really thought I was going to get crushed. I thought, well, here's how my life's going to end. The second floor hallway being crushed by this senior citizens group while Cuomo just stood on the desk. I think the thing about him, he always thought he could win an argument, and he usually could. So he was never afraid to take on anybody. If there were protesters outside the mansion, he would, like, have them stop the car. He'd go out. He'd argue with them for a while. Then he'd go in and have his dinner or whatever was part of his daily life, which you really, you know, since Mario Cuomo, you have not seen. It's not just Andrew Cuomo. I think certainly George Pataki, even Elliot Spitzer, even David Patterson were not as accessible in that same way or didn't make their aides accessible for, you know, long on-camera interviews as we see in the Inside Albany, footage.
And what Karen is describing there, Evan, of Mario Cuomo standing on top of that trooper's desk, you see that in the video. It's amazing. It's like something out of a Bogart movie from, you know, the late 40s. It's quite a piece of video.
We're talking to Matt Ryan and Karen DeWitt. Matt is the managing editor and co-host of New York Now, and he is the, what are all the titles, I guess? You're the co-host, the producer, the man behind Governor Mario Cuomo Poetry and Prose. I'm trying to give you all the titles you deserve on this, Matt.
I don't know. Producer, a little editing here and there.
It was, right. Researcher.
I got to give credit to my videographer, Brian Flynn, who, this is the first project of this magnitude I've ever worked on where I didn't shoot any of the footage for our interviews. He was really good. And we've got a lot of really wonderful people. I mean, some of the best journalists, you know, the state has ever produced. You know, some of the politicians from back in the day, Lou Lehrman, who was the GOP nominee in 1982 against Mario Cuomo. George Pataki's in this, former Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno is in it. There are a lot of faces that people will say, oh, geez, I forgot about him.
Yeah, and it really adds to the texture, I think, Matt, that you interviewed so many people. I mean, dozens and dozens. You probably could have done it with just five people, but it was just so much better having the depth of interviewing all those people.
No doubt about it. And listeners, you can check out Governor Mario Cuomo, Poetry and Prose. It's going to air Sunday, December 18th at 7 p.m. on WXXI-TV. Certainly a film to set your calendar for. But, Matt, they can see it online now. Is that correct?
That's right, at WMHT.org/Cuomo. It's going to be up there for a few more weeks. So if you have time or sometime this week, you can hop on WMHT.org/Cuomo.
It is one of the fastest hours I can remember watching recently. And listeners, Megan Mack and I will make sure we tweet that link. So if you want to check it out now, but if you miss it, of course, we'll have it in December. What I want to do, since Karen's time is a little more limited, I want to work a little bit backwards through some of the film, because there's something that I think is very interesting and very timely right now. So what I want to do is listen to a clip that we have from the film, and it's about what happened when Mario Cuomo decided again that he wasn't running for president. And of course, if you go back to, I wrote down the day, was it December 20th, 1991, I think. Everyone was waiting for that decision from Mario Cuomo on whether he was going to New Hampshire. He was getting in, and, you know, late in the game, considerably late in the game, I think, by presidential race standards. But this was a guy who had been rumored to run in 1988. He was considered a potential front runner for 1992. So he could have parachuted in and been a front runner. And I want you to listen to this part of the film, because it has both Mario Cuomo's announcement, his extraordinary announcement that day in Albany that he was staying, that he was not going to enter the race. And then you got Steve Kornacki from MSNBC with a very interesting historical perspective on what that day did to American politics for a generation.
For months, as you know, I've focused my energies on dealing with the state's budget problem. I had hoped by now to have some resolution, but the Republicans have responded to every reasonable offer of compromise by the Assembly and the governor with new and predictably unacceptable demands, making it apparent that they believe, at least for the moment, their own purposes are best served by pushing the state closer to the brink of disaster. It's my responsibility as governor to deal with this extraordinarily severe problem. Were it not, I would travel to New Hampshire today and file my name as a candidate in its presidential primary. That was my hope, and I prepared for it. But it seems to me I cannot turn my attention to New Hampshire while this threat hangs over the head of the New Yorkers that I've sworn to put first.
And it's one of my all-time favorite what-ifs, and I've given it a lot of thought. I am convinced there's no Bill Clinton. There's no Hillary Clinton. He was running for president against Bill Clinton, and you got revelations of Bill Clinton having an affair and Bill Clinton using basically an Italian-American slur. Running against Mario Cuomo would have destroyed him with that. And so I am convinced, because of that, if nothing else, Cuomo gets in the race, he beats Bill Clinton, and if he gets that nomination in 92, the way the economy kept going, I'm convinced Cuomo beats Bush and becomes president.
So, Mario Cuomo could have been the two-term president from the 90s. There would have been no Bill Clinton presidency, and almost certainly at this point, no Hillary Clinton nomination and potential presidency. Karen DeWitt, do you agree with that?
Well, I feel like that documentary really captures the drama of that day. Matt does a really good job with editing to make it really dramatic, and it was. I mean, we had national press all over the Capitol. You know, nobody really knew what he was going to do up until the last moment. And in those days, that wasn't that late to get in the race. It was the deadline to register for the New Hampshire primary. We didn't have these years and years of these presidential campaigns.
Karen, you make us so wistful for the past.
Yeah, I know. I know, but it was a big disappointment. But honestly, you know, I've been thinking about it more since I've seen the documentary. I don't think Mario Cuomo ever really would have run for president. Like, I think he just didn't have it in him, and I think his son Andrew Cuomo says that at a point in the documentary.
But do you think he would have won, Karen, if he did have it in him?
You know, I don't know if he would have won, but he probably would have knocked out Bill Clinton in the Democratic primaries. Mm-hmm. I think Steve Kornacki in there, the MSNBC guy, makes a really good point on that. He could have finished off Bill Clinton, and who knows who would have ultimately, you know, won. Maybe Bush would have won. But, yeah, he probably would have knocked out the Clintons, and so that would have really changed history. But, you know, Mario Cuomo's excuse, the budget, they were always arguing over the budget in those days. The budget had been due the previous April, so it was this ongoing thing that it just seemed like he was kind of, you know, using that as an out. You know, he could have done something to placate the Republicans in the state Senate and wrapped up the budget and moved on and run for president if he really had wanted.
Okay. Matt Ryan, do you think he would have won?
Ah, boy, it's a tough question. Here's the thing that's most shocking is that he was up in all of the polls, 15%, 20% in some that I've seen. Can you imagine someone today being in that position and not going for it?
No.
I mean, it's absurd. But, you know, he was always the two minds of a certain subject, and that always weighed on him. And Andrew Cuomo told me this, and I think he's being 100% honest when he told me this, is that Mario didn't want to run, but he felt an enormous pressure, an enormous burden from the people who wanted him to run. And so we ended up setting up a real look at it, what you would call, I guess, like a transition team. He set three different people to actually look for it. In the documentary, you see someone who literally went to New Hampshire the night before. I mean, it was 50-50 right up until December 20th, 1991. But I think ultimately, you know, Mario Cuomo decided that, as Andrew Cuomo said, he didn't have the fire in the belly to run for president.
I think he certainly
could have won. In fact, the Liberal Party head of in New York State said one of the things that George H.W. Bush feared most was going on a debate stage with Mario Cuomo, and that you can understand.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Karen.
I was just going to say, I think it speaks to an era of a different kind of politician that doesn't automatically feel a need to be president, can be happy with their lives not being president, maybe less ego-driven, you know, less kind of narcissistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly Mario Cuomo could be very arrogant, but he was also kind of humble in this way, too. And so I don't know if someone like that would be governor of New York State now. It's just this new political climate in the last, you know, quarter century, different kinds of people rise to the top.
Yeah, and then there's this extraordinary moment in the documentary that follows that announcement of Joe Bruno saying that Mario Cuomo comes back and is verbally abusive with him, blames him for his obstreperousness, and the budget isn't passed, and I couldn't run for president because of you. And Bruno, to this day, says he was abusive. And I'm trying to get inside. This is the fascinating thing for me throughout this documentary. What a complex character. As Karen DeWitt just said, this is not the modern prototype politician who's always climbing. This was a guy who was always considering, but not necessarily even walking through a door that was open, let alone trying to force a door that was unopened to open for him. And why? And then when he doesn't decide to run, you know, Matt, is that moment with Joe Bruno, is he, do you take that as Mario Cuomo using the leverage that he had to say to Bruno, I better get what I want because look what I just did. I got out of the race. Or was he rationalizing with himself? Is he beating himself up saying, I really wanted it and I'm trying to convince myself that these guys are to blame? I mean, it's sort of an interesting question as to why he did that.
No question. And I don't think Evan Joe Bruno has ever told that story before.
I had never heard
that. Which I was grateful for. I would think he was probably using it as leverage is my guess now. But when he told me that story, I had never heard anything like that before. And it made me question, you know, because you always had heard, wow, he didn't really want to run for president. But some of the salty language he was using to Joe Bruno that day, it gives you pause to think, well, you know, maybe he was seriously thinking about it. But I think the best guess is that he was using that as leverage to try to strike a budget deal. Okay, listen, you hurt me in this respect. Now you've got to help me out here.
Yeah. Well, we're going to let Karen DeWitt go in just a second here. Karen, my last question for you on this is your take on the legacy. And I think what Matt did in the documentary was demonstrate that this was a historical look at a fascinating character in our government, but it was not a hagiography. he talked to Fred Dicker, and Fred Dicker offers a very damning assessment of Mario Cuomo's legacy. All talk, no action.
Yeah.
And I know Andrew pushes back, obviously, against that. But how do you view the legacy of Mario Cuomo, Karen?
I mean, there's some truth in what Fred said. I don't think Mario Cuomo was as good as running the agencies or getting things done, but he sure could make you feel good about being a New Yorker. And he was a politician, and the last one certainly we've had here, who really aspired to, you know, the better angels of people, to appeal people's higher good and aspiration. Compared to what is going on currently, you know, in the 2016 election, it's a huge, huge contrast.
Well, that is for sure. Karen, thank you, as always, and we'll look for your reporting as we learn a little bit more about the resignation of Elaine Calieros and other matters related to state government later today.
Thanks. Glad to do it.
Karen DeWitt, WXXI's Capitol Bureau correspondent. She does appear in the film that we are talking about today, Governor Mario Cuomo, Poetry in Prose. It is a brand new one-hour documentary from Matt Ryan, who's my guest for the hour. You can see that film now. You can watch it online, and we're going to tweet links to that so you can check it out. And I'll just tell you, as someone who respects Matt's work, I am not surprised that this is a riveting film. Let's get our only break of the hour and come back with Matt next. Coming up in our second hour, the growth of unified sports. It falls under the umbrella of Special Olympics, but it's not exactly the Special Olympics. It's about having students who are typically abled and able-bodied athletes to play on sports teams, basketball, sometimes bowling, with students who have various disabilities. It is about inclusion and understanding one another and competition, and we'll talk about its growth in Western New York. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The Would He or Won't He was a game with Andrew Cuomo, probably starting with Matt Ryan, his convention speech in 1984, right? I mean, you had the Associated Press reporter in your film saying that there were delegates on the convention floor in 84 after hearing Mario Cuomo's keynote, not only saying he's our guy for 1988, but it's too bad he's not the candidate right now, right?
That's right. It was. I had more than one reporter tell me just that. But one of my questions was, all right, as I was kind of researching this, how does a guy go from just being elected virtually out of nowhere in late 1982 to being the keynote, less than 2 years later? But I had plenty of people tell me that one of the reasons is that, you know, it was almost like Rocky Balboa, the way he knocked off Ed Koch. You know, I guess we can get into a little bit of that at some point. He was the heavy underdog there, and he beat Lou Lehrman, the GOP candidate in 1982 for governor, by going against Reaganomics, campaigning against that, and against some of Ronald Reagan's policies. And the National Democrats saw that, and they said, you know, maybe this is a guy we need to give a more serious look. And then certainly they knew what a great speechmaker he was. And so, they gave him that grand opportunity, and he took full advantage of it. And something I didn't get a chance to get into in great detail is, for really the first time, that 1984 keynote speech by Mario Cuomo, it was different, because after what they did, and this was all engineered by Andrew Cuomo and Tim Russert, longtime moderator of Meet the Press, who worked for Mario Cuomo from 1982 to 1984. They ran a video before Mario came out, and then they kept the house lights off. And so all of the lights were directly on the keynote speaker, which of course is just a common occurrence nowadays. Before, that was the first time that had ever happened. And so everyone's attention was directly at the lectern with Mario Cuomo, and he took full advantage of it.
And Matt, as much as his career, the Would He or Won't He, focuses on December 20th, 1991, the 1992 presidential race, was the more realistic window for him 1988?
Yeah, that's another thing I had. In 1988, I was in high school back in Victor. And so I really wanted some answers about that year, because when you have a keynote speech like that, that's a killer one that everyone seems to applaud, of course the strategy is to, you're a candidate 4 years from then. And that's just automatic nowadays. He did look into it a little bit. You know, Bob Schrum, famous Democratic politico out in California, he had conversations with him. I spoke to a few people who did preliminary research on certain states, Ohio, Illinois, and a few others. But my best guess is, from all the people I talked to and the research I did, is that he didn't think the Democrats could knock off George Bush that year. Ronald Reagan was a popular figure still in his second term, and he might have thought that was too big of a mountain to climb.
So there's 1988. We've talked about 92, and there's this other poignant moment in the film. There's so many great moments. It's really fantastic. And there's this moment in the film where he's not even done with his speech on December 20th, 1991, and the national press is like, we're out of here. Like, this is over. And the local press is looking around going, this is really the end. And for that moment, you may think this is the end of the would he or won't he. And here's the fascinating thing. I think the public is much more well-versed in the presidential flirtations than the Supreme Court flirtations. So Bill Clinton becomes president, and he has an appointment to make, and his goal is to give it to Mario Cuomo. And wow, so the film not only details George Stephanopoulos and Andrew Cuomo and their back and forth, and is he gonna say yes to that? You know, you had me digging through my own archives in The New Yorker because I remember a piece after Mario died from Hendrik Hertzberg. And
that great piece.
You had me go back to that. And Hendrik Hertzberg writes about the fact that, you know, Bill Clinton didn't even really have a backup. He wanted Mario Cuomo on the Supreme Court. You have someone in your film say, Mario said, I want this so bad I could taste it. And Hendrik Hertzberg writes the following. Quote, think above all of his mesmerizing command of language in conversation, in debate, and on the page. Antonin Scalia, Mario Cuomo's fellow Italian-American Catholic, has a reputation as the court's foremost intellectual. Justice Cuomo would have made short work of him. We can theorize about where the tragic flaw lay, the one that rendered Mario Cuomo unable to seize the moment, to grasp the destiny that his whole life had prepared him for. But there is little doubt, and none in my mind, that he would have been a great justice, one of the great half dozen in the court's history, end quote. That's from Hendrik Hertzberg in The New Yorker. And I think that you saw that drama in the film as well. What happened there, man? I mean, why could he never say yes?
It's really puzzling. To me, it's even more puzzling than the presidential choice in 91. You referred to the person who said that Mario told him that he wanted it so bad he could taste it is a fellow Western New Yorker, Stan Lundeen, who was the lieutenant governor for Mario during that time period. And Lundeen told me, he said, I was quietly making plans for a campaign in 1994 myself for governor. I mean, he was so sure at one point that Mario was going to take that. I mean, he told him that he wanted it. And Bill Clinton, once he got the nomination in 92 during his campaign and the questions about the Supreme Court came up, he said he wanted to think outside the box and not necessarily grab a judge from somewhere in the country, but grab a great thinker like Mario Cuomo. And sure enough, that was his choice. He had behind-the-scenes conversations, a lot of them involving George Stephanopoulos and Andrew Cuomo. And Andrew told me that Mario came to multiple decisions on multiple different occasions. I mean, they talked a lot about it. And in the end, Andrew said that Mario didn't take it because he thought he could get 6 more years as governor.
The
last 2 years of his 1990 term and then re-election in 1994. And very, very few people thought that was a smart idea, including Andrew Cuomo, who said that I did not think that was an automatic.
So I want to know, when you sat down with Andrew Cuomo, you know, Andrew gave you such good stuff in terms of what was actually happening. Did he express to you a sadness that his father couldn't pull the trigger on the presidency or the Supreme Court?
No, I don't think he would ever reveal that publicly if that was the case. But, you know, he did call it frustrating at times, and he called it honest, brutally honest in a way that he would often talk out loud, you know, when he was with the press about the decisions that he was going back and forth on. Again, something that you just don't hear nowadays from a politician. But he said, Mario, you know, is he really being truthful when he says this? But he says he didn't really have any regret about not choosing to take that Supreme Court seat or not running for president in 1991. Now, I've had a few other journalists tell me of instances where Mario expressed a little regret. So, you know, I don't know if he's trying to maybe just kind of cover up his legacy a little bit or not trying to complicate it. But, He said that he thought he could get 6 more years as governor, which he said is what he ultimately wanted.
Listeners, the choice, by the way, was Ruth Bader Ginsburg after President Clinton had to go back to the well on that. And remarkably, I guess George Stephanopoulos and Andrew Cuomo were the ones who were kind of communicating on behalf of Mario and Bill Clinton. At one point, you know, Andrew Cuomo expresses to Stephanopoulos he's going to say no, don't ask. And then it was this, well, he's interested again. And Stephanopoulos had Bill Clinton ready to call Mario, and Andrew, minutes before, calls him and says, he's going to say no again, don't do it. And George is just stunned, saying, if this is it, this is it. It's never going to happen. But I thought Hertzberg in his New Yorker piece, Matt, made an interesting point. Cuomo, Mario Cuomo's, you know, career is partially defined by this would he or won't he and the waffling and the eventual not being able to say yes. But he said that is troubling for a potential president. It is perfect for a Supreme Court justice. It shows that you think long and hard about every angle, that you consider all the possibilities, that you are not boxed in and tunnel vision, and that ultimately you consider all the evidence, and that would have made him an even better justice. Do you agree with that?
That's so true, and it was so well put. And that article you're referring to was a fabulous one. And what's interesting, Evan, most is that I've had so many people. We talked to 41 people on camera for this.
Wow.
And I can't tell you how many people expressed just they were shocked that they thought Mario Cuomo would be the perfect choice for a Supreme Court justice because of what you just outlined. And they were just so some were saddened that he didn't take that offer, because you know they knew him well and they thought there is no better spot for Mario Cuomo, the great thinker, than on the Supreme Court bench. But yeah, a lot of people were disheartened by the fact that he never chose that path.
Talking to journalist Matt Ryan, he is, of course, the award-winning producer and host New York Now, and his film is Governor Mario Cuomo, Poetry and Prose. It's an hour long. It's an outstanding piece of work, and you can see it on WXXI-TV on December 18th at 7 p.m. That's a Sunday. We'll let you know as we get closer there. But you can also see it now online, and we've tweeted that link if you want to go check it out, because it's a fast watch. It's great fun. And between now and the rest of the hour, I'll go back to the beginning here, because I mentioned right off the top, there's something I never knew, Matt Ryan. I was not around for the Playboy interview. I didn't realize the Ed Koch Playboy interview was so troubling for him. So take us back there. Set the scene for 1982, you know, sort of this battle of titans it turned out for the primary here.
1982, very early, January 15th or so, Hugh Carey, the two-term governor, comes out and says that he's not going to seek re-election. And so people in both parties scramble to try to get out there. And on the Democratic side, you had Mario Cuomo, who was a little-known lieutenant governor. You had the assembly speaker at the time, a gentleman named Stanley Fink, well-regarded leader of the chamber here in Albany. They were thinking about it. But once Ed Koch announced that he was going to run, the field cleared on the Democratic side. Many of the top Republicans chose not to run. Controller Ned Regan, who was a powerful force in Albany at the time as controller, he decided not to run. Only one person remained to go against Ed Koch, and that was Mario Cuomo. When the first polls came out, Ed Koch was up 20, 30 points. I mean, it was a laugher. And then this article came out in Playboy. Now, I had to go to eBay, Evan, to find this magazine from 1982. A really, really long, deep article this interview that Koch gave with Playboy. Now, he gave it in November of 1981. He never thought for a second he was going to run for governor. And so, you know, he wasn't as guarded in what he was saying to the reporter at the time. But it all came out that, as you mentioned earlier in the show, that he was hating on suburban life, called it a waste of time. There were no good restaurants in Albany. He loved his Chinese food, and so there were no good Chinese restaurants in Albany. And basically gave no reason for anyone north of Westchester County or north of the Bronx to want to vote for him.
And his people did say, that interview really did stay with them, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. They would campaign. You'll see it in the film. I think he was up in Glens Falls, which is about 40 minutes north of Albany, right at the start of the Adirondack Park. he was out there at nighttime and they were booing him like, you know, Yankees fans would boo Red Sox players. I mean, it was intense. It was loud. And every time he went upstate, that article followed him wherever he went, whether he was in Watertown, whether he was in Rochester, Buffalo. It stuck with him the entire time. And eventually, that was a big part of his downfall.
But he still would have won that primary if how many times am I going to call Mario Andrew? We've got a Cuomo in office now. if Mario wasn't such a skilled campaigner, you agree with that?
Yes. I mean, I think you say it was a 25-point lead, and people saw some of the debates. Mario could have probably cut that in half. But, yeah, that was just a killer, killer article for Koch, and he never recovered. But Cuomo really, he, as you see in the film, he was really masterful in his debates against Ed Koch, especially that first one, which is always the most important.
So here's the part of the film that I still don't think I understand. You know, Mario Cuomo was always accessible to the voters, to the media, you know, and then he runs for re-election in 1986, and he got very prickly with the media, as you show in the film, and he was dodging debates. The League of Women Voters calls him out for dodging debates, even though, Matt, he had demonstrated that he is a remarkably good debater, and then mm-hmm. he didn't like it when the media called him out on that. I think accurately put by one of the people that you talked to in the film, he was so used to good press that it was caught him off guard a little that he was being criticized, but he was absolutely dodging a debate. I just couldn't understand how this guy, who was so skilled, could have a lapse like that. He still ends up winning with 65%.
Oh, he crushed him.
And he would have dominated anyway. Why does that actually started a little bit of an adversarial relationship with the media that didn't exist before. Why do that?
I guess he chose the route of the Rose Garden strategy, where you kind of do the bare minimum. We see that with a lot of the popular politicians today. Why give someone an opening when, you know, I'm up by 30, 40 points and risk having some kind of a gaffe that gets focused on? Yeah, I'm with you. I was kind of banging my head against the wall, too, trying to figure out why he wouldn't debate more. You go back to 1982, Mario Cuomo was the person calling for 7, 8, 9 debates against Ed Koch. So, of course, it's... You can call him a hypocrite for not doing it when he was governor. The same thing happened in 86. It happened in 1990. It even happened in 1994 against George Pataki as well. This guy who was considered this great debater, maybe the best debater in the country, refused to do it against his opponents in 86, 90, and 94. The only way he would do it is if every candidate was on stage. And I think there was a debate in 86 where there were like 10 people on stage.
Yeah.
Now, to some of your listeners, that might sound like a familiar strategy. That is what Andrew Cuomo did in 2010 and 2014.
The rent is
too
damn high. Yep.
That's right. And it gives, you know, less of an opening for the top challenger. In 2010, that was Carl Palladino. 2014, that was Rob Astorino. Going back to Mario's time, Andrew O'Rourke in 1986, 1990, Pierre Renfrey. It does. And I had one journalist, it just missed making the cut, but he said, Mario Cuomo, for all his flaws, and yes, he was down in the polls in 1994 against little-known George Pataki, he said he thought he would have crushed him on the stage, you know, if they had debated. Now, I'm not sure I would have used that language, but yes, that's... It's so hard to put your head around. How could someone who's so good in one respect just not go and debate his opponents?
I don't think it has served Andrew Cuomo well, because I think you're exactly right. He has followed that same playbook from his father. And just as an example, in 2014, he finally agrees to one debate. I think it was an hour long. It was in Buffalo. And you've got multiple candidates there, just as there were in 2010. Not as many, I don't think. But regardless, Andrew Cuomo did just fine. He's a very effective debater, whether or not you agree with his policies. And I think, you know, I remember talking to Karen DeWitt and other colleagues after that debate and saying, What is he so afraid of? Why does this playbook exist? I just wish Matt, as a journalist, somebody who thinks it's good to get voters a chance to compare candidates, I wish anybody would understand that this is required of you, or at least it's a public expectation. But that was my biggest surprise takeaway from your film, is that I didn't realize he had done that in 86. So.
I'm 100% with you, and the only way to explain it is it's the safest route for someone like for Mario Cuomo at the time, or Andrew Cuomo. If you're up 20 points, 25 points in the polls, as he was in 2010, for example, he's thinking to himself, why should I go for three or four debates where I could possibly make a couple of gaffes that get turned into YouTube clips or GIFs or Vines or whatever. It's that Rose Garden strategy that can be so frustrating as a voter.
Yeah. We got a few more minutes left with Matt Ryan talking about his documentary. And I wanted to ask you, as someone who had to cut a lot, I have no doubt, you did 41 interviews, you went through, you know, you probably didn't see family or friends for months, you're dealing with all the work that you do in the background for this. And as someone who right now, I'm in the midst of this year-long research project that hasn't rolled out yet, and I'm in this position of we're cutting, and eventually it starts to feel like you're actually cutting bone, and you feel like, I can't cut this, but you must. What is one thing that you wish you had a few more minutes in to include that didn't make the cut?
Oh, boy. The cuts I had to make were excruciating, deeply troubling.
Yes.
And they'll stick with me for a little while. A lot of them were just were interviews that, you know, because in this doc, there's no narration. And, you know, the narrative is moved along by the interview subjects and then the video as well. And I just had some great clips. For example, in 1994, we didn't get much into that, but this was David versus Goliath on paper. I mean, Mario Cuomo versus a one-term state senator from Westchester named George Pataki, which no one knew anything about. And I had a lot of really compelling stuff from that time period, from interviews from George Pataki himself, who was really good, I thought really honest, from Joe Bruno, John Faso, who was the GOP candidate in 2006 against Elliot Spitzer, that really talked about why Mario Cuomo was so disliked the longer he stayed in office. John, for example, I'll give you just one example. John Faso told me the story about going to Corning, you know, just south of you guys at Rochester, where Mario Cuomo lectured a business down there for not doing enough for upstate. And the people told John Faso, they said, we're not investing any more money in New York State until that guy is out of office. So just a lot of good key sound bites that I wasn't able to get in there, and more great video, especially from the 1982 Ed Koch, Mario Cuomo matchup, and the equally compelling 1982 candidate on the Republican side, Lou Lehrman against Mario Cuomo. They had a debate in New York City where for 20 minutes, Evan, the panelists or the moderator didn't even speak. The candidates just went back and forth. I mean, it makes you long for that time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is an outstanding piece of work, and it ends on this note. You get this drama of, you know, is he going to get in the presidential race? All of that, and it takes you right back to that. Then you get the drama of, is he going to take the Supreme Court appointment? He doesn't, and decides to run it once, a fourth term, ends up losing, and you have this sad moment where they didn't even want to leave the governor's mansion. They really loved it.
Truly stunned. Yeah, they did. I mean, that and Andrew told me, this is another thing I wasn't able to get in there, but Andrew told me that, I mean, that pained him greatly for a number of years, really probably more than anything else he ever faced politically. And it wasn't until Andrew was able to capture the governorship in 2010 that the healing started to begin for Mario Cuomo after that painful loss in 94.
Matt, 90 seconds left here. I grapple with people on social media when I hear people say that real journalism is dead. And I understand why some people feel that way, but I also think that's a little bit intellectually lazy. I think there is Pulitzer-winning work coming from David Farenthold at the Washington Post in this campaign. You could point to great journalism everywhere. And I think you're doing it, and I think this is the kind of work that need to see more of. And I just want to get your thoughts on the time it takes to do this and the value you think that it gives our New York community.
I think I've definitely seen the value just in the feedback we've received locally from this region and from around the state in pockets where this has kind of aired as well. And people, no surprise, people love learning about history. And this takes you back to a time period of standard definition, 4:3 ratio. And it makes you long for a different time. But I think it's important to learn about things like this. Mario Cuomo is really the last nationally significant governor that we've had here in New York. And the fact that this story hadn't been told before, there's not even really a good biography on Mario Cuomo, which a number of people have lamented. So I just thought it was too important of a story to tell, and I hope people enjoy it.
I hope you keep doing work like this. Though, I mean, I know that your family and friends probably would like to have you back, so...
That's right.
Thank you, Matt.
One more free time now.
Matt,
thank you, Evan.
Matt is the man behind this wonderful film, Governor Mario Cuomo, Poetry and Prose. He is the managing editor of New York Now, and you can see that if you want to wait till Sunday, December 18th. We're going to air it on WXXI-TV at 7 p.m. You can check it out now. We've tweeted links to that. Congratulations, Matt. We'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it, Evan. Thank you.
Matt Ryan joining us for the hour. Short break, more Connections next.